From Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. More than a decade after the Great Recession, a new recession, triggered in part by the coronavirus pandemic, is on the horizon. As CARES Act benefits are set to expire, and Republicans are reticent to offer more aid to struggling Americans, economists fear another housing crash like the one we saw in 2008. When homes in states like California were forced into foreclosure, Wall Street hedge fund investors saw an opportunity and grabbed homes at bargain basement prices, locking ordinary people out. The Obama administration failed to thwart the kind of predatory capitalism that has now had long-term impacts on communities. Will President-elect Joe Biden avoid those mistakes? My guest is Aaron Glantz, senior reporter at Revealed from the Center for Investigative Reporting, two-time Peabody Award winner, finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. His work has appeared in the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, PBS NewsHour, and more. And his latest book, out now in paperback, is called Homewreckers: How a Gang of Wall Street Kingpins, Hedge Fund Magnates, Crooked Banks, and Vulture Capitalists Suckered Millions Out of Their Homes and Demolished the American Dream. Welcome to the program, Aaron.
It's good to be.
So when you first joined us, when your book came out, of course, we were right in the middle of the Trump administration, which is now in its waning days. And at that time, you pointed out that there were many people who were close to Trump, in the Trump orbit, who were actually the figures that were part of those who suckered millions out of their homes, as you put it. Can you remind us of that connection between Trump first before we get to what's happening now?
Yes. So when we look at the impact of the Great Recession that's still being felt today, 8 million American families who lost their homes, what I wanted to write home wreckers was who won and the rest of us lost when the home ownership rate in America declined every single year under President Obama. Who was the beneficiaries of that? And that investigation led me to people like Steve Mnuchin, who is Donald Trump's Treasury Secretary, Wilbur Ross, his Commerce Secretary, Tom Barrack, who introduced Donald Trump at the RNC and planned his inauguration of capitalist, Steve Schwarzman, the chairman of Blackstone, the largest private equity firm, who's a good friend of Trump. And all of these people, all men, they all really cashed in. They built up giant, Mnuchin got paid by the taxpayers as he foreclosed on over 100,000 families, running a bank that was a foreclosure machine. And then others like Schwarzman and Barrett gobbled up the houses after the fact. And the reason that all of this is important right now is that all of those people that I mentioned who are close to Trump, who profited off of the housing bust, Mnuchin, Ross, et cetera, now they're going back to the private sector during a catastrophe where they can profit again. And then also looking at the policies of the Obama administration that allowed all of that to happen. Because you know who was there during those 8 years standing right next to President Obama is our incoming president, Joe Biden.
So are we seeing some of those troubling signs that we saw when the housing crash first happened? Are we starting to see foreclosures? I mean, we know that people who are renters are facing potentially evictions. I imagine mortgage payers who've lost jobs are in a pretty tight situation as the CARES Act expires.
We did some good things in March with the CARES Act. The eviction moratorium. There is also foreclosure moratorium in the CARES Act for anyone who has a government-backed mortgage, which is most people. So all of that is good. And all of those are steps that neither George W. Bush nor Barack Obama took during the House. So we have put the brakes on catastrophe. The bad news is that all of this relief is temporary, and it's going to be coming to an end at about the same time that Joe Biden takes office as the president. So, for example, there are about 3 million American families right now with mortgages in forbearance. That means they lost their homes, they can't pay their mortgage, but the bank is letting them legally fall behind without going into that foreclosure process. So what we've done is we've kicked that can down the road, building up a mountain of unpaid bills. And Biden and Congress are going to have to decide, you know, who is eventually going to foot the bill for all that. Is it going to be the banks? Is it going to be the taxpayers? Or is it going to be those families who are kicked to the curb yet again?
It's almost as though Republicans, who are the ones reticent to extend those benefits that the CARES Act started, don't really want the Biden administration to succeed. I mean, I know it sounds bizarre to say that, but in the context of how Republicans behaved during the Obama administration, it's not so outrageous.
Well, one of the really shocking things that I included in the paperback update of my book was watching some of these home wreckers in the months after the coronavirus pandemic started. Steve Mnuchin, as Donald Trump's Treasury Secretary, very early on said, this is going to be a great opportunity to invest because things presumably are going to get cheap. Wilbur Ross made similar comments about China early on when it looked like China was going to be hard hit and America was going to elude this virus, that we should kind of all be grateful at China's demise. So these are politicians and business people who like to profit on distress. And the most concerning one is Steve Schwarzman, who is the chairman of Blackstone. This is a giant private equity firm that after the 2008 housing bust built up an empire of 80,000 homes. You know, it used to be one landlord, one house or two houses or three houses, but this company eventually bought up 80,000 homes all across America. And when this pandemic started, he told shareholders that his company was sitting on $156 billion in cash. They call it dry powder to spend in a crisis. But he told those investors that he wasn't going to start spending it right away because, quote, distress takes time to play out. And so what we've seen so far is because of these interim measures that have been put in place where we don't have a foreclosure crisis yet and real estate prices haven't yet fallen, these companies like Blackstone are mostly staying on the sidelines. But as soon as they start to see prices dip and homeowners in pain, they're going to start spending big. And we've already seen some early indications of that. Blackstone put about $300 million into this company called Tricon, which is a big landlording company. $300 million, of course, is nothing for Blackstone, but it's just like them putting their little finger into the housing market before they put their whole body in.
So they're literally waiting for the suffering to begin.
Absolutely. Distress takes time. That is their business.
Wow. So
and remember, when Biden was the vice president and Obama was the president, these companies actually arranged for giant subsidies as these homes. And so that's another question. Will that replay itself?
And let's go through that, because the incoming Biden administration basically looks like a slightly, refurbished version of the Obama administration. He has reached out to many people who were part of the Obama White House, you know, which isn't surprising, I suppose. Biden is, you know, going through his Rolodex and bringing on the people who he knows, who he's worked with in government. What were the mistakes that the Obama administration made in the last recession that you hope Biden doesn't make or can maybe undo?
Well, the first thing was letting people fall into foreclosure to begin with. Mm. That was all preventable. People came to Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, who then as now were in positions of power. They came to Obama and Bush administration officials, and they reminded them that when the U.S. government was in crisis during the 1930s, President Franklin Roosevelt started a government-run bank that would take loans by people who couldn't pay and refinance them down to make them cheaper and give the banks a haircut. And then people would stay in their homes and pay them back slowly over time instead of getting foreclosed on. And this government-run bank called the Homeowners Loan Corporation, it refinanced one out of every five mortgages in urban America. It saved 1 million homes and it made a profit for the taxpayers, because it put the squeeze on the bank and it gave new loans to homeowners who paid those new loans back with interest. And so, you know, it's very smart people, not all lefties, you know, some people from the American Enterprise Institute, former members of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, et cetera, came to official Washington. They said, now is the time to do this again. And they were told it was too expensive. But what happened instead was 8 million Americans lost their homes. And then after the homes, while the homes were being foreclosed on by people like Steve Mnuchin, because the government was backing up those mortgages, we actually paid the banks while they foreclosed on people through these loss share agreements. And so Steve Mnuchin's bank ends up getting paid almost $1 billion by the federal government. And then after the homes are foreclosed on, when our communities are full of blighted and vacant properties, we then, as the government have ended up with these homes, we then sold them in bulk to private equity firms like Blackstone and Colony, the one run by Donald Trump's good friend, Tom Barrack. And all of that happened during the Obama years. So the good news is we haven't let that wave of foreclosures start yet. It seems like we as a country have learned something, and we have established these forbearance programs that allow people to put off their payments. So, you know, if the vaccine does a wonderful job and the economy just bounces back and everyone gets a job again and can pay off those arrears, we will be in good shape. But if that doesn't happen, then there's going to be very, very important and difficult decisions to be made in the first few months of the Biden presidency.
I mean, and employment rates have to go back up. You know, people can't pay their mortgages if they're out of a job. And you're right, it's up to the sort of how the vaccine gets rolled out, which the Trump administration doesn't really have a detailed plan for. They're leaving it up to the states. It's also new. It's not clear yet whether employers will require a vaccine before allowing people to come back to work. But I mean, the housing market in general is deeply linked to the health of the economy as a whole, right? When we're thinking about whether people can make their mortgage payments, we have to think about employment.
Well, and what's going to happen is, if you recall, like during the Great Recession, people were underwater. They owed more on their home than it was worth.
Right.
And so then that was one reason that they got foreclosed.
That was the housing bubble where prices just rose and rose and rose. And then
now what we see during the pandemic, if you're watching the housing market, you see housing prices going up and up and up, even now, right? So that's good if you're like me and you own a house and you're watching your property value go up. But you do have to wonder if how realistic that is, given the fact that the unemployment rate is so high and the country is so troubled. And are we in another housing bubble? And so what you're starting to see is, you know, you mentioned the eviction moratorium that we have in place. You have 12 million tenants across America who have fallen behind on their mortgage. And the first place in the economy that we're seeing pain is actually amongst mom and pop landlords. You know, you have a big private equity firm like Blackstone with you know, tons of real estate. If they get in a hole on some of their properties, they can move money around and get easy financing, no big deal, right?
They but have the cash sitting around to tide over such crises.
Exactly. But if you own your own house and maybe one other property and it's your life savings and your tenant can't pay, then you're in a really difficult spot. And in addition, now you're being told that you can't evict that tenant. And you're not getting any help from the government to deal with this problem. And so that, I think, is going to be the first target of these home wreckers, 2020 or COVID home wreckers, so to speak, is going to be the small mom and pop landlords. And you're going to start to see a real consolidation of residential real estate. I mean, I write in the book, we already have about 3 million homes and more than 10 million apartments owned by shell companies across America. You're going to see a lot more of that very fast as landlords sell off, as their tenants can't pay rent, unless this is solved.
Now, on November 3rd, Aaron, California voters, you and I are both based in the state, struck down Proposition 21, which would have been a rent control measure. And a lot of the reasons and justifications for no on 21 was that it would be the mom and pop landlords who would suffer. Do you think, first of all, that that really was a justifiable reason? Wouldn't that law have also helped to check the hedge fund investors who own so much property in California?
Well, that law would have had an equal effect if you're a mom and pop landlord or if you're a big corporate landlord, because it was all about rights for the tenants who are living in those homes. And so, we have an interest as a society in saying that if you are paying rent to a landlord, no matter who it is, if it's like somebody who lives across the street or a big Wall Street investment firm, that those landlords have to meet a minimum standard. They have to provide you with heat and water and a roof over your head, and they have to fix things when they break. And in exchange, you give them money every month. And the question that Prop 21 raises, well, how far should those rights extend? What I'm talking about here is the consolidation of who owns that real estate in the hands of fewer and fewer people. And so, if you're a tenant and you're dealing with a landlord who lives across the street, they could be a good landlord or a bad landlord. But I guarantee you that they will have many interests beyond just maximizing their profit with you on a month-to-month basis. They may want the neighborhood to be in good shape. They may be just holding it on for their retirement and not care so much if they make a little bit more every month. They'll want the community to be strong because they live here and they are making that long-term relationship. When you live in a building that is owned by the people that I write about in my book, then all you and your house are a line on a ledger, and your home is usually been rolled into a giant mortgage-backed security that has been cut up into tranches and sold to bondholders on Wall Street and leveraged for some other purpose altogether. And in that kind of relationship, what I document in the book is that lease agreements become much more pro-landlord, and that much of the maintenance cost has to be done by the tenant, for example, and that eviction filings go way up because they don't pick up the phone and talk to the tenant when they fall behind. So seeing more of those types of landlords emerge from this COVID crisis would be very, very troubling. And they're so big, those homes never be returned, to families again.
What do you think needs to happen at the congressional level as well? We talked about what Biden can do. Do we, I mean, does Biden have to rely on Congress for legislation to ensure that Americans remain in their home and don't go into foreclosure? Or are there things he can do by executive action? Depending upon how the Senate races in Georgia go, he may or may not have much cooperation from Congress. I mean, even if Democrats win a 50, win 50 states in the Senate, we're talking about razor thin margins.
I think that there's a lot that a President Biden could do. I mean, all you have to do is honestly look at the eviction moratorium that's in place now that was done by fiat by President Trump, for example.
Well, things that
I'm pretty.
Republican presidents do by fiat somehow just seem out of reach of Democrats, in terms of their political will, often.
Yeah, I mean, we need to give Donald Trump a little bit of credit. Maybe it's because he's a real estate guy, but that forbearance program that I was talking about was eventually codified in the CARES Act. But even before that was done, Ben Carson announced that if you had a mortgage backed by the Federal Housing Administration, which is mostly working class people, especially people of color tend to be more likely to take out FHA loans than white borrowers, that there would be a foreclosure moratorium. And that was followed up by the Federal Housing Finance Agency that regulates Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They initiated their own forbearance program even before the CARES Act was passed. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot that somebody like a President Biden could do. And hopefully he has learned, you know, from the mistakes of the Obama-Biden years.
And there are, of course, just going back to the connection between the economy as a whole, employment, and the ability for people to remain in their homes. There are a lot of other things that President Biden could do by executive action, you know, such as, for example, forgiving college loans backed by the federal government that could help people pay off their mortgage when they have, you know, 300 fewer dollars to have to pay off in loans.
Right. But the way that housing becomes very, very important and the government has a lot of direct involvement is you have to remember that the federal government owns most of the debt that people have on their houses. And it even owns a lot of the debt that landlords have on their buildings. Mm. And so if, you know, like right now, I own my house, I'm paying my mortgage payment every month to some mortgage servicer. But one of the things that we learned in the 2008 housing bust is that the people that I'm paying my mortgage payment to, they don't own my debt. So who owns most of the debt? Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the Federal Housing Administration. If you live in rural America, the Department of Agriculture. A lot of the loans in America, 85% of people's housing debt is owned by the government in one way or another. And so, you know, one way to reduce people's burden is to give them money to pay these bills, right? Give tenants money to pay their rent. Give, you know, families money to pay their mortgage. Another way to deal with the same problem is to deal with the debt that people have and deal with reducing the debt. And thing that has happened so far in this crisis, it's actually been quite positive, is the fact that interest rates are so very low right now. So a lot of people, if they still have a job, they can refinance their loan and lower their monthly payments so that if anything horrible does happen, they don't have to pay so much every month. And that works if you're a homeowner or a landlord or you own property. The problem becomes what if you don't have a job anymore? Right, then you can't refinance and access these low rates. Well, even then, the government, because we own the debt, that's how we've been able to do these forbearance programs where 3 million people have been allowed to fall behind. So we have to deal with the debt that people have on their houses and treat them in a fair and equitable way. And that is going to be in large part, I think, at the discretion of President Biden.
It's interesting that the government, you know, all of these folks who denounce the idea of socialism, but don't admit that our government does, of course, have its hand in a lot of the economy by design and by necessity. And that can be a good thing. But that is often left out of ideological conversations about the economy. Aaron, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where is a good place on the internet that people can find out about the work you do?
I mean, they can just Google my name, Aaron Glantz, or there's a website, aglantz.com. And of course, I work at Reveal, and we're at revealnews.org.
That's revealnews.org. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, take care.
My guest has been Aaron Glantz, senior reporter at Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. His latest book out now in paperback is called Home Wreckers: How a Gang of Wall Street Kingpins, Hedge Fund Magnates, Crooked Banks, and Vulture Capitalists Suckered Millions Out of Their Homes and Demolished the American Dream. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.